Well, ladies and gentlemen, we meanwhile all know that climate change is an important political topic in many countries, in Europe and elsewhere in the world. Traditionally, Germany wants to be a forerunner in limiting greenhouse gas emissions. This has consequences for the German role in international climate negotiations, as well as for the internal climate regulations. But climate change, we all know, is not only a political topic. Climate change is becoming more and more important for the private sector. It is becoming a business case. Companies have to respond to new legislation, to the price signals resulting from the European Emission Trading Scheme, and to changing demand of the customers. Not surprisingly, climate change is the most of all environmental topics for business in Germany. More than 50% of all environmental experts from business and business association interviewed by our institute pointed out that climate policy has been their main topic in 2007. Furthermore, climate change is the only environmental issue that reached top management level in various business sectors. In consequence, I would like to comment on three major topics. First, the German environmental policy in Europe and worldwide. Second, the targets set by the German government. And third, the response from the business sector. Let's start with the first point. Germany tried to foster the reduction of greenhouse gases on an international level. Climate change can be stopped at a global level, or it can't be stopped at all. We all know that. This is why the German government believes the negotiation on a post-Kyoto agreement should gain momentum. The German presidencies of the European Union and the Group of Eight, the G8, this year were used to speed up the post-Kyoto process with the following results. At the Group of Eight meeting in Heiligendamm, the heads of state pointed out that all major emitting countries should contribute to a global framework which should follow the Kyoto Protocol of 97. The European Council went even further and declared new targets for the reduction of greenhouse gases. According to these declarations, emissions in Europe should be reduced by 20% till 2020 compared with 1990. If other important industrialized countries had similar targets, Europe would go even further. In this case, a reduction of 30% should be achieved. Furthermore, targets for single measures like the expansion of alternative energy supply have been agreed on. And now to the special target set by the German government for us. For many years now, the German government have attached great importance on Germany as a role model in international climate protection. The main aim of national climate policy is to prove that greenhouse gas reduction can be reached without harming economic growth. Unfortunately, economic growth was rather disappointing in Germany when greenhouse gas reduction were realized. We heard this morning. In recent years, higher growth led to higher energy consumption and higher emissions. However, climate policy in Germany remained to be ambitious, and reduction targets are very challenging. This means, and these are the target in detail, the German government wants to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 30 to 40% until 2020, and this means 10 percent points more than the European Union. According to the Kyoto Protocol and the European burden sharing, Germany must reduce its emission by 21% in 22 years, from 1990 to 2012. A 40% target means that we have to reduce emissions by another about 20 percentage points in only 8 more years. Therefore, climate protection efforts must be more than doubled. So far, we have already reduced our emissions by about 20%. More than half of this is a result of the breakdown of the East German economy in the early 90s. But this, of course, can't be repeated. Several measures have been announced to achieve the new targets. An example, while the use of carbon-free energy sources is being promoted, dismantling of all nuclear power plants is being pushed, biomass continues to be enhanced, and housing insulations is subsidized. In general, the government wants energy efficiency to be boosted by 3 percentage points each year. And this hardly seems to be realistic. And this brings me to the response of the business sector. The business sector in Germany is really working hard and willing to contribute. Principally, we do accept political targets, but we want to act responsibly. We do not want politicians to decide about our measures. We want largely to decide ourselves how to reduce emissions. Businesses, and especially the manufacturing sector in the industrialized countries, must not only be seen as part of the problem, businesses provide the solution. The legal framework should provide the necessary rules without harming the competitiveness of our industries. As private sector, we have to ask for fundamental improvements. And this means, first, we need realistic targets. Some of the political targets can hardly be achieved. A 40% reduction until 2020 is very challenging, and an annual percentage increase of energy efficiency is more than optimistic. We need realistic targets instead, as I call it, wishful thinking. Second, a recent McKinsey study showed that we could reduce emissions by about 30% till 2020. Further reduction would be too expensive and would be harmful for the German economy. Another 7% points could be reached if nuclear power plants would not be shut down too early. The ambitious targets of the German government cannot be reached without nuclear power, nor only with expensive alternative energy sources. Third, more than 5% of our total historic emissions could be avoided by modernizing our buildings. Better insulation and more efficient heating systems pay off after 10 to 15 years. These are the cheapest option for climate protection. Government agency should help to realize this potential. In contrast, a duty to use expensive solar energy for heating is not acceptable, we think. Germany is not the middle or the north of Australia. Homeowners should be neutrally informed about alternatives, and then they should decide about their investments. Fourth, we need to be very careful with new obligations for the transport sector. In Germany, gasoline consumption for cars has been reduced already by 25% in the last 15 years. Further drastic reduction is for the time being among the more expensive means to reduce emissions. A better way to reduce gasoline consumption is, for example, to train car users in economic driving. This means to challenge the public behavior. Fifth, the European Commission has announced to regulate carbon emissions of new vehicles. However, it is crucial that all producers are forced to contribute to the only one target of the 130 gram carbon dioxide per kilometer. We need more intelligent solutions, differentiated, for example, by the type of car and by region. Only one target for everyone is counterproductive for the economy of some of the member states. And we should not forget that in the end, customers decide whether they want to purchase premium or compact cars. Fuel consumption is only one of several reasons to decide in favor of a specific vehicle. Six, the European emission trading scheme has already boosted prices for certain industry by up to 11%. Further price rises would endanger our competitiveness. We need a level playing field within Europe and with competitors in other countries. Therefore, we need global efforts to reduce emissions instead of unnecessary high local costs. In summary, industrialized countries like Germany can and will do more for the global climate than reducing the last tenth of a percentage point at home. In order to counter global warming, it will be necessary to focus more on the development of new and more efficient technologies and their application on a worldwide base. And this is what we do. As a leading export nation, we can and we do offer very advanced and efficient technology. And this is a true contribution to global climate protection. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. So there will be speed limits on the Autobahn. Our next speaker is Monsieur Barbizon. He too is an educator and an analyst. He has had a distinguished career, which is not finished, as you'll see from your notes. Among the various positions he's occupied has been Secretary General of the Union des Banques à Paris, and he's now Director General of the Institut de l'Entreprise. He is a former chairman of the French Open University and is now a board member of Lafarge, a very large and important international French company. Professor Barbizon.
Last September and October in Paris, in France, we had the National Conference on Environmental Issues. It was the first time we put together around the same table all the stakeholders, NGOs, trade unions, businesses, elected officials, and administration. And the conference was strongly and personally supported by the President of the Republic, Nicolas Sarkozy, and the President adopted officially the main conclusions. And as you know, the main quality of French people and French politicians is humility. And if I had to summarize the conclusion of the National Conference, I would say France wants to be in a leading position, even if clearly French position is already really favorable. Per capita greenhouse gas emissions are 20% below the European level, the average European level, and 30 to 40% below the most important European countries. The two main objectives of the National Conference was to improve France's energy efficiency by 20% from now to 2020, but you know, it's the objective of the European Commission, and to generate 95% of our electricity through non-impacting climate sources. How to do that? First, in preserving our nuclear capacity. You know, France is in a very specific situation because we presently produce 75% of the French electricity from nuclear. If you add the hydroelectric, it's more than 80% produced by non-polluting sources. And the president said clearly, we will preserve our capacity in renewing the existing plants, in modernizing these plants, but we don't create more plants. We don't extend our program in the future. But we will preserve the present one, because nuclear is a subject of strong debate in France too, as in the many countries. Second, in reaching a leading position in renewables. Third, in investing massively in transport. We plan to build 2,000 kilometers new tracks for the TGV, or high-speed train system. If we do that, we will avoid every year by 2020 2 million trucks traveling through France from north to south. And if we add 1 million more in refurbishing our inland waterway system, it's 3 million trucks every year we will avoid by France, and it's a lot. Fourth, in investing in building. By 2012, all new building should comply with low consumption standards. And by 2020, all new building should be energy positive. And we will engage a huge program of renovation of the 30 million existing buildings and dwellings, starting by the 800,000 public-owned buildings, housings in France. How to finance that, and what are the main economic implications? Many voices at the conference claim for a new ecological taxation, and the president clearly refused. Even if we can create specific taxes, for instance, to tax the trucks who travel through France every year, just in order to finance alternative system. Part of this program can be financed by reallocating existing resources from roads, for instance, from roads to train. Part of the program can be financed by public-private partnership. And I had dinner in Paris last week with the CEO of Vinci. Vinci is one of the major French company in the field of public works, and he is just signing a partnership, a private-public partnership, for building 400 new tracks for the TGV. By self-financing, at the present level of price, it is estimated that investment, the payback period for building renovation is less than 10 years. But probably the more interesting in this conference is the role given to prices. And remember what Dr. Shapiro said this morning. Because the best way to bring change in behaviors is probably the price system. And prices today do not reflect the cost of pollution. And France will propose in the next few months to the European Commission, which has a responsibility in terms of, has a competency in terms of taxation, France will propose a low VAT rate for clean product, just in order to make them less costly than the polluting one. And, most important, to give a price to carbon. As you heard this morning, the European Union is the first economic area to subject its leading company to quotas, with the possibility to sell and to buy credits on the market. It's a quite complicated system, but not really satisfactory. But the proposition of France, and France we made this proposal to the European Union, will be to oblige the non-European producers exporting goods in European Union to buy credits on the market. And if they don't, to tax the products themselves, just in order to maintain a fair competition between European companies and companies from abroad. It's a huge program. I say once more, he has a clear support of the President of the Republic, and when you know the role of the President of the Republic in the French democracy, it's not impossible that the program has been involved, implemented in the next few years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our last panellist in this review of impact is on another large European economy, and that's Spain. Our next speaker is... let's get my notes here. Is Mr. Boada. He is a very distinguished figure in Spanish business. He asked me to keep his CV relatively short. I will. It's all in front of you, but I noticed three things in it. He'd been leading Lehman Brothers for 14 years in parts of Europe and in Spain. I noticed that in addition he is chairman of, I won't try and pronounce it in Spanish, the equivalent of the US Business Roundtable, and that's like our Business Council of Australia. It's a group of CEOs of leading companies. And I also noticed as well this man is multi-skilled, not only as a very distinguished financier and business financial executive. In 2005, he was nominated as Spain's Engineer of the Year. Senor Boada.
Thank you very much for the introduction. You know, I was in a similar position a number of years ago. There was a very distinguished Swedish speaker, and he was presented with honors, decorations, honorary doctorates from universities, you name it. And the guy rose and suddenly said, well, after this presentation, I'm really looking forward to listening to me. I can assure you this is not the case today. Good morning. I want to thank CEDA for organizing this conference, all of you for your attendance, and especially those of you from Australia for the warm welcome and the great hospitality you have given to us over these days. Thank you very much. I am very impressed by what I've learned yesterday and this morning, and I'm also very impressed by how little I know about the subject. So I ask for your forgiveness before I start. And I want to make a presentation on the Spanish situation as distant as possible from the political contents that the issue of climate change has in my country, as in so many others. In Spain, this matter has become an object of passionate debate, nourished by the prominence of some positions which have been very gossiped by the media, some doubts about the credibility or the rigorous approach of the scientific data usually mention, and the important fact that it is an easily thrown weapon between political parties, above all with a view to the electoral struggle that will take place in my country next year. I want to express my opinion from the economic standpoint of the problem, but first I would like to mention something that is crucial to understand the Spanish case, directly linked to the Kyoto Protocol mentioned this morning, signed by Spain and from which derive certain consequences and commitments. In this regard, I have to underscore that the Spanish position has ended up worse than what it should be in comparative terms with other countries of the European Union. We are among the losers that Dr. Shapiro mentioned this morning. As a member of the EU, Spain decided to align itself in 2002 with the commitments of the Kyoto Protocol, even though it had yet not been put into effect. I hope you can see what's on the screen. It shows the burden-sharing agreement of the European Union, or the commitment on greenhouse gases emissions for the period 2008-2012 with reference to 1990. With the reduction objective of 8%, assuming Kyoto for the whole EU that you see at the bottom of the table, the vertical axis is 1990, and then to the right and the left you have the allowances, pluses or minus, of what you can emit up to 2012, with the reference of 1990. So we predicted the creation of an emission rights market under the system called cap and trade, as was discussed this morning. And under the system, each member state was obliged to submit in April 2004 an allocation plan concerning rights of emission, among them the licenses assigned to each industrial plant as a starting point for the proper operation of the emissions trade. The assignments that were made in 2004, apparently the EU Commission is allowing now to change them within the countries. After all, what came to birth like an expert market system has turned into a system of income transfers among both countries and technologies. It would have been, in our opinion, more equitable to use average emissions or a benchmarking system where the emission rights are not related to total emissions, but to the emissions in excess to the ones which could be generated by an industry or plant equipped with the best technology. Although at first sight, if you look at the slide, the distribution of emissions within the European Union favored Spain, we can grow 15% from what we were in 1990. A more detailed analysis shows otherwise. Because in that period, 1990 to 2004, the Spanish GDP increased 44% in real terms. And this percentage is significantly higher than the one achieved by other important European countries. In 2002, Spain exceeded already by up to 40% the level of emissions obtained in 1990, while some of those other countries had reduced their level in the same period. By 2010, we're supposed to emit 7.4 tons per capita, Germany 15.3, and the UK 13.5. I don't think it's very fair, to say the least. In my case, and in our case, in the Spanish case, and this is the important fact, in spite of the rapid increase of the conversion level, the Spanish emissions per capita keep, as I say, on being lower than the European average figure. However, in theory, we should decrease our current emissions, which exceed, as I mentioned earlier, to only 15% more than in 1990. This is a goal which seems to be difficult to achieve, not to say impossible, in my opinion. Going back to the analysis I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks, and from the economic theory standpoint, climate change can be characterized as a market failure. Therefore, we assume a negative external influence, since it is the result of the overexploitation of resources which are not supposed to have any owner. In other words, whoever contaminates does not take into account the damages caused, since does not have to pay for that. This has, at the same time, and it's important, a global impact, because the emission of greenhouse gases has an effect that does not make any difference among national borders. This means to assume, at least partially, that there's a certain correlation between climate change and human activity. And in the climate change discussion, two contrary positions are usually compared. I believe in simple slides, but on this one maybe we went overboard. There are those people who defend nature above all and put environmental quality before any other consideration. Their most extreme followers would presumably advocate a return to a pre-industrial revolution economic model. And here comes another. We also have those who primarily value the well-being that results from economic growth. They don't give any value to environmental defense because only economic growth brings them profit. In practice, these two positions are not genuinely representative of society's general perception, because most people deem better to combine economic growth with environmental care. The greater the amount of the both goods, the more the well-being achieved. Therefore, we should not set up economic growth against environmental quality, although the relationship between both of them is complex and difficult. And in this regard, we have to take into account three different effects which are interconnected. First, the scale effect, according to which, if nothing changes, the larger the GDP of a given economy, the more use of natural resources takes place, and consequently, the bigger environmental damage is produced. Second, the composition effect, because not all the productive sectors are equally harmful to the environment. Finally, the technological effect. New technologies can help maintain the current levels of production or even increasing them, while better controlling greenhouse gas emissions. The problem is that the combination of these three effects has uncertain results which vary depending on the countries. The empirical evidence does not totally clarify the matter, and it seems that the environmental Kuznets curve is the one which represents it better. And here it is. According to this hypothesis, the environment tends to deteriorate in the first stages of economic development to start recovering once a given society has reached enough material well-being to motivate the demand of a higher environmental quality. Poor and developed countries are obviously at different parts of the curve. In the specific case of Spain, it is necessary to improve our position in the negotiation to apply the Kyoto Protocol so that the system applied shall promote the use of the most effective environmental technologies, unlike what is happening at present. It will be both a technical and a difficult discussion, but a necessary one in order to develop a future strategy for a country in this field. And with regard to this strategy, we have to differentiate three aspects. One, although it is true that we face an international problem, it is of the utmost importance that Spain, as well as other countries, has its own analysis instruments. Thus, it is necessary to develop, together with the cooperation of public and private institutions, the models for analyzing different scientific scenarios, as well as the economic consequences that the country may suffer due to the use of one instrument or another. Some of the models which are being currently used in the international negotiations are technically weak, while higher quality alternative models are not proposed. This restrains our capacity of negotiation. And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. It's our fault, the way we negotiated the Kyoto Protocol. On top of having a good overview of the specific effects for Spain, depending on one or another alternative, the existence of Spanish models would provide our negotiators and regulators with a higher capacity of discussion. Second, the preeminence of market instruments that limit public interventions to those measures strictly necessary to prevent possible failures. Although in theory there should be main differences between the use of one or another, in practice that isn't the case due to the various problems that arise when command and control regulations are applied. Nevertheless, when the necessary conditions for its proper functioning come up, market stimulates activity conducive to minimizing costs and to better exploitation of scarce resources. In this landscape, we can consider taxes and tributes in general, the fiscal costs and subsidies, the development of activities that improve information about the polluting effects of products or services, the systems of marketable licenses or the voluntary agreements between the administration and the most affected sectors. I'm coming to the end with the third factor, which is the improvement of the Spanish economic capacity of adaptation. Only adapting ourselves to an uncertain environment, which will probably change rapidly towards unknown directions, we will achieve that the concern about environment becomes an opportunity of growth instead of a cost. At the same time, all this will depend on several aspects, like the human capital sensitivity, the organization flexibility, and the innovation capacity of the Spanish economy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You were, I think, excessively modest in saying that you didn't know much about the subject, but in fact, you've given us an extremely perceptive presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know how, if you realise how lucky you are in the four presentations we've just received. If you listen carefully to what we've had presented to you, we've actually, in one respect or another, had every major issue of the climate debate touched upon, and frankly, all its difficulty. In respect of your last point, I don't think any country, with the possible exception of the Russians, has actually undertaken its own independent scientific analysis of the review of climate change on their economy. Almost all the analyses that have been done have actually been under government control. You know what that means. We've now got, I'd like to thank all speakers as well for sticking to their timetable. I've explained to them that CEDA has a tradition that you speak to the time or you're dead, and I'm very grateful for that. It's meant we've got more time for discussion. David's pushed out our tea break until 11, so we've got 20 minutes. You've each got, I think, a microphone on your chair, so I'd like to open up for discussion. Who's got some questions or comments to make to our presenters? Can we put a microphone over here, please?
Risto Pentila from Finland. We heard a very convincing case this morning from Dr. Shapira for carbon tax. Now, I would like to ask the panelists, how likely do you think that Europeans are going to say, oops, we made a mistake, let's start again, let's go carbon tax? Is there any likelihood that carbon tax would come up as a viable alternative to the cap and trade scheme?
Dr. Barth?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the idea of a carbon tax has been discussed in Europe, was preferred by many people, many institutions, many countries, but didn't came into effect in the end. I don't think that on the medium term Europe wants to skip its emission trading scheme in order to introduce a common carbon tax or an international carbon tax. What we have is national carbon taxes, and I think it's imaginable to have a globally agreed on carbon tax as well, but right now Europe is trying to export its emission trading scheme and to link it to other emission trading systems in different parts of the world, and not so right now the political momentum is in the other direction.
Would any other panelists like to comment?
Well, in the case of Spain, and I want to evade the question, but we will have radio silence until March of next year when we have the elections. Until then, we're greener than green. We will comply with Kyoto, and everything looks rosy.
You know, we haven't elected in a couple of weeks, so we haven't had a lot of silence, unfortunately. More questions?
Well, just a short comment. In Germany, we have already quite high taxes on many energy sources, and so we have, for example, a relatively high tax on the gasoline. And whatever is about additional tax raises will be seen negative by the public. So this is an additional argument to be careful with tax raise on the energy sources.
Yes, here, please.
Thank you. My name is Prashani Sathipal. I'm from South Africa. We'd be hard-pressed to get climate change on the agenda of the certainly government and business community immediately. It's not going to happen in developed countries. However, we understand the implications of climate change on our populations. A lot of the solutions that you've outlined today have been very sophisticated in terms of developed country solutions, and certainly you've also had many lessons come out of those solutions. What would be your suggestions to developing countries in terms of how they should get climate change on the agendas, number one? But what is the roles of developed countries in supporting developing countries, not only in terms of supporting technology adoption, but in terms of actual adaptation so that populations are able to actually deal with the impact on of climate change on them?
Big question.
The question is, if I understand it correctly, about adaptation and the role of industrialized countries to help developing or emerging countries to adapt on climate change. First of all, adaptation in Europe, or especially in Germany, has not been discussed very much until 2 or 3 years ago. First of all, because the effects in Central Europe, the effects of climate change in Central Europe are not that important, and secondly, some political forces fear that the discussion about adaptation would be an excuse not to do anything in order to mitigate. Adaptation in Europe or in Germany is very much discussed in the framework of development aid, or in the framework of how to help emerging countries. I'm not that sure what it could mean very concrete, what European countries could do. But I think it is very important that the old development policies is, in a way, adaptation mainstream.
Yes, please.
I might as well. I think that developing countries have all the right to become developed countries, as we did a number of years ago. So it's a responsibility for everybody, but specifically for us, to help developing countries understand that this is an important issue, and help by means of transferring technology or seeing how, or financing, or God knows how, so that this being a problem for everybody, there are no boundaries. So if somebody emits, it's an emission that affects everybody. And we have been emitting for a number of years in order to develop ourselves. So it is difficult. There is something called, economists know it well, the Maslow pyramid. And you have to eat first, and then you decide, you know, other things that you want to do. So in this case, developing countries are at the lower or low echelons of that pyramid. Well, we are at the top. We think about a cleaner environment. In discussing that curve, many countries are still in a position that they have not been able to reach this stage of thinking that cleaner environment is a priority. They're still developing. So these are a long answer to tell you that I think we're all in this and we better figure out how we're going to help you develop your country and at the same time keep a cleaner environment for everybody. Thank you.
Brabizon has asked the chair, but just before I give him the microphone, I should say, in respect to that particular point, the National Reform and Development Commission of China in June produced a major analysis of climate change and the Chinese economy. And one of its statements, which was really not a conclusion, it was an assertion, was that no country has ever raised the standards of living with a low per capita consumption of carbon. The Chinese don't intend to be different.
Yes, I agree. One aspect of the problem is we will have soon those emerging countries, which will be very important in terms of global emissions, and with per capita emission very low. And it's obviously we have to find a solution to solve in the next 30, 40 years this problem. China, India will be on the top in terms of global emission, but still very low in terms of per capita emission.
Professor, well, may I just add one word? Mr. Barth mentioned already the development aid the developed countries are given to the developing and emerging countries. Being concrete is not only a question of spending money, but of helping concrete to do certain subjects. And of course, taking the automotive industry as an example, where we had to go through a long, long period to develop the status which we are in today. It is a century, it is 100 years. And you are starting more or less from scratch, so you should not start start from square one. It is that as far as technology is concerned, as far as production facilities are concerned, you should start with the existing technology. And in particular in your country, I know that some German industries are there already established, and of course they should give you the help to start with the technology of today and not of some years ago.
Okay, other questions? We've got time for two more before we break. The middle row here, and then we'll take one up front.
Hello, Andrew Dolling, Department of Primary Industries, Victoria. Dr. Bart, you mentioned that methane is being considered in the European trading scheme. I get a bit excited by that, but does that mean that agriculture is being considered, or is it methane from other processes? And secondly, what is Europe thinking about in terms of mitigating regarding agriculture?
Well, methane is not yet considered, but it's discussed to include it into the scheme in future terms. But as far as I know, it's agriculture is not really being discussed to be introduced or to be included into the ETS. There are 11,000 plants within the system, and I don't know how many agricultural farms we have, and I think that would be it's a very bureaucratic and it's very also very costly procedure for the companies to take part in the emission trading system, and that should not be be the case for agriculture. But there are other measures or other discussions about climate protection and agriculture, for example. The question of nitrogen, or the question of methane, which is emitted by cows, and there's, for example, quite a lot of research on changing cows, in fact, to emit less methane.
In Europe, the truth, we have to say the truth. In Europe, agriculture is not an environmental problem. It's a pure political problem.
Okay, question up here, please.
Cypress Arnold, Murdoch University, Perth, Australia. I'd like to go back to Dr. Shapiro's speech again, to follow on from the first question. As Dr. Shapiro said, the case seems to be compelling in terms of actually making a difference to global warming and to emissions. And it appears that the problems of a trading scheme globally are still profound. Australia's many government agencies in Australia are now trying to devise such a scheme, but we are not at all clear how the details will emerge and what sort of details it will be. Whereas, as Dr. Shapiro said, a tax could be far more effective. Now, if the next US president were to be influenced by people like Dr. Shapiro and bring on a tax regime, would that make a difference to how Europe would behave beyond that? And what do you think also will happen in the multilateral fora like the UNFCCC?
Dr. Bala, I think it's first call on this one.
Yeah, there are many ifs in this this question. I think there must be a solution in the multinational negotiations which includes different aspects, or which allows different national or regional ways to work in order to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And I think a commitment of a cap for one region can be equivalent to a commitment for certain instruments of other regions. So, for example, if the United States don't want to accept a cap or a reduction commitment, like the classical Kyoto commitments, a national commitment to introduce a carbon tax of I don't know how many dollars per ton carbon dioxide, etc. That can be as well as an equivalent commitment and something in a future Bali conference or future conferences should be able to agree on. But I think nevertheless that Europe will still remain with its emission trading system.
Does any other panelists want to comment? We're just about to wrap up. I've got a question for the panel, which listening to you has been, I think, really an eye-opener. I mean, many of us are aware of the difficulties that are being faced in Europe in trying to introduce these schemes, although many of us are not. Generally, our debate in Australia, very little is said about the problems being faced in Europe. But listening to all your presentations, I must say, a question comes to my mind, which I'd like to ask each of you. All of you have put forward propositions that the direction of policy in Europe is actually going to start to be costly for growth. Is this not going to become a political problem at some point in Europe? These policies that are being developed and pushed are going to be the expense of economic growth. Is there any other option about this? Or do we have that wrong?
Well, I inserted in my little presentation that the policy of our government is to do all the action needed without stopping economic growth. And the policy, our policy leaders believe that this is possible. We have some question marks about that. So the problem in Germany and many other countries is to start argumentation between government and industry, between the people who are setting the target and the people who have to fulfill them. And finally, we have to come to a compromise where we say, okay, we are contributing and we are contributing the must. But we raise our fingers when they ask for things which are not feasible or which are not possible. So, and this is the open discussion and the compromise we are trying to search for on both sides. The only one, and I would not like to raise now a new big issue, but it was very interesting that, and Finland and Germany is in the same European Union, and my colleague from Finland said as the first point to fulfill the target is we stick to the nuclear energy. We even will increase it. And in contrast, Germany is saying, and we have to push it down immediately, you see. And the truth might be somewhere in between. And what we feel is, and this is the industry's position, is this has to be bargained. We cannot say just politically, we are willing to stop something. We have to ask the experts, and we have to really to find out, is it an option? When do we have alternatives for it? And not saying we just shoot politically for alternatives and we'll miss the targets at the end. So this is the bargaining what we do for the time being in Europe, and I'm sure in other countries, in Germany, and I'm sure in other countries in Europe as well.
I think the overall aim must be to get as much climate protection for every euro or every dollar invested. And therefore, I mean, incentives matter, of course. But in the end, on the global level, research and development, new technologies, selling new technologies or using new technologies all over the world is much more important and has a much, much higher effect on global climate protection than these kinds of, well, economic engineering that we are discussing in Europe or in the States.
Now that the nuclear point was raised, you see, we do have, we are against nuclear in Spain. Sorry, let me rephrase that. The government is against nuclear energy in Spain, but we're very happy to buy nuclearly produced electricity from these humble neighbors of ours. So it's a little bit inconsistent. And the situation we have is that if you ask people, would you like, are you an environmentalist? Everybody will say, of course I am. Are you for climate change fighting and getting things right? Everybody will say yes. But if you attach a cost to it, then the number of the advocates really shrink dramatically. So I think there's a situation where we should all be conscious that this is everybody's job, that everybody must have an attitude towards climate change, and everybody must recognize that if we want to survive long term, we need to pay the cost short term to get things right. But because, as I said earlier, whatever is done anywhere affects all of us.
Around the nuclear once more. I am sure, and we are sure today in France, that the decision taken in 1974 to launch a very ambitious nuclear program will give today and will give a great advantage to France. And the condition was very curious, because after the first oil crisis, we can launch this program because the French government had a kind of agreement with the Communist Party, because the trade union, which had the majority in the national company, state-owned company, producing electricity, was very close to the Communist Party, and the Communist Party at that time was in favor of nuclear because of the USSR. Probably today it would be not possible to launch such a program, but it's done.